The following program is brought to you by the Pacifica Program Service and Radio Archive.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Sidney Roger. In my last broadcast, I dealt with a subject that certainly received a great deal of response from you. And I thank those of you who have written to me and hope those who haven't will continue to write. The subject matter was hoodlumism on the streets, and my feeling that it had to be said, candidly and honestly, that a disproportionate amount of this was among young Negroes, very often just kids, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old. I gave what, in my opinion, were some of the reasons for this, but frankly, could come up with no answers. I asked for answers from you. Rather, I asked for a dialogue to be started. I asked then, what can we do to keep these, our children, to save them from this lonely wandering, for they are alone even as gangs, save them from this wandering with this free-floating hatred that explodes in violent eruption that can only add more corrosion to their already too corroded lives? Well, many of you have written, often long and very thoughtful letters. None of you chided me for bringing up the subject, quite the contrary. The subject, by the way, will come up again, and KPFA will be a medium to set into action this very important dialogue. Next Friday, December 28, at 9:30 p.m., on what is called the 11th hour, the original program will be played again from the original tape, and then a group of people in the studio will discuss the issue. A dialogue will be entered into by some of you who have written and by others whom we call resource people. And hopefully there will be some understanding, if not answers. Some have said that perhaps some better understanding of the recent history and drive toward liberation of the Negro people in the United States might have a very healthy effect on some of these kids, if only they knew. Well, I don't know. It's an idea worth thinking about. You know, it's just been about 100 years since the Emancipation Proclamation, but emancipation implies something someone gives to someone else. The American Negro, particularly, and patiently waited and waited and waited for this emancipation, and then began his own emancipation. The great turning point, interestingly enough, was not some grand and glorious pre-planned march to greatness, but a quiet event that happened just some 7 years ago in December this month. It was in December 1955 that a very quiet, and I found when I met her, a very shy woman named Rosa Parks in Birmingham, Alabama, tired after a long day's work, decided not to give up her seat on a bus. And out of that quiet, tired, quiet, and courageous act was born a national movement, the Walk and Pray Bus Boycott of Montgomery, Alabama. After that, a movement with sit-downs, freedom riders, school enrollments, and much more swept the South and inspired the nation. Several months after the event in Montgomery, I had the pleasure of speaking to Rosa Parks in a small apartment in West Oakland where she was visiting. I asked her then what actually happened to set off this train of history, and this was her answer.
I left work on my way home December 1st, 1955, about 6 o'clock in the afternoon. I boarded the bus downtown in Montgomery on Coates Square. As the bus proceeded out of town, on the third stop, the white passengers had filled the front of the bus. When I got on the bus, the rear was filled with colored passengers, and they were beginning to stand. The seat I occupied was the first of the seats where the Negro passengers take as they on this route. The driver noted that the front of the bus was filled with white passengers and there would be two or three men standing. He looked back and asked that the seat where I had taken, along with three other persons, one in the seat with me and two across the aisle, was seated. He demanded the seats that we were occupying. The other passengers very reluctantly gave up their seats, but I refused to do so. He then called the officers of the law. They came and placed me under arrest, and I was bailed out shortly after the arrest. And the trial was held December 5th on the next Monday, and the protest began from that day, and it is still continuing.
Well, Mrs. Parks, what in the world ever made you decide to be the person who, after all these years of Jim Crow and segregation, what made you at that particular moment decide you were going to keep that seat?
I felt that I was not being treated right and that I had a right to retain the seat that I had taken as a passenger on the bus.
But, Mrs. Parks, you had been mistreated for many, many, many years. You've lived most of your life in Montgomery, Alabama. What made you decide at the first part of the month of December 1955 that you had had enough?
The time had just come when I had been pushed as far as I could stand to be pushed, I suppose.
Well, Mrs. Parks, had you planned this?
No, I hadn't.
It just happened.
Yes, it did.
Well, had there been many times before in your life when you thought that maybe you were going to do just that kind of thing?
I hadn't thought that I would be the person to do this. It hadn't occurred to me.
But don't you suppose you and many others also thought one time or another you were going to do this thing sooner or later?
Well, we didn't know just what to expect. In our area, we always try to avoid trouble and be as careful as possible to stay out of trouble and along this line. I want to make very certain that it is understood that I had not taken a seat in the white section, as has been reported in many cases. The seat where I occupied, we were in the custom of taking this seat on the way home. Even though at times on this same bus route, we occupied the same seat with white standing if their space had been taken up, the seats had been taken up. And well, I was very much surprised that the driver at this point demanded that I remove myself from the seat.
You have done something here that I didn't quite understand myself, namely this. You said that you did not take a seat in the white section. There's no doubt that has been reported in that way. What happened then, that you were in what is normally a colored section, and because whites had to stand up at this point, the driver asked you to get up to allow someone else to sit down.
Yes, white persons.
A white person to sit down.
Yes.
A person who may or may not have been as tired as you.
Well, that's true.
But who had not paid any more than you had.
No, he hadn't.
And then what happened?
The driver said that if I refused to leave the seat, he would have to call the police, and I told him, just call the police, which he did, and when they came, they placed me under arrest.
Wasn't that a pretty frightening thing, to be arrested in Montgomery, Alabama?
No, I wasn't frightened at all.
You weren't frightened? Why weren't you frightened?
I don't know why I wasn't, but I didn't feel afraid. I had decided that I would have to know once and for all what rights I had as a human being and a citizen, even in Montgomery, Alabama.
Because you considered yourself a citizen as well as a human being in Montgomery, Alabama. You say you weren't frightened, and yet to be arrested in Montgomery, especially on a charge in which you are challenging the whole system of segregation, could be a pretty frightening thing. It could even lead to a certain amount of physical brutality, couldn't it?
That's possible. It could have.
But this didn't bother you?
No, it didn't.
And a lot of people, of course, feel quite ashamed at the disgrace of being arrested. Apparently, you didn't feel there was any disgrace involved in this one.
No, not in this one.
Well, then you were arrested, and what was the charge?
Violation of the segregation law of the city and state of Alabama and transportation.
Yes, but you were sitting in the colored section. What law were you violating?
I didn't think I was violating any.
Well, Mrs. Parks, at the recent trial of Reverend M.L. King, it was brought up by the defense that there had been, over many, many years, many brutalities and humiliations of Negro passengers on these buses. Can you give us some examples that you yourself have seen or experienced personally of some of these humiliations that took place day after day when you were riding the buses?
Yes, I have been refused entrance on the buses because I would not pay my fare at the front and go around to the rear door to enter.
Let me have that again now. You mean you pay your fare at the front and then we're forced to walk around and enter into the rear door?
Yes, that was the custom if the bus was crowded up to the point where the white passengers would start occupying.
And even if it was raining or anything of that sort, you might have to pay your fare at the front and walk back in the rain to the back of the bus and get in?
Yes, that's true.
Well, Mrs. Parks, then you were arrested, and you say you went to, you posted bond. Did you have a trial?
Yes.
And you were found innocent or guilty?
Guilty.
You were found guilty, and then what?
The case was appealed.
How did this particular incident of your being arrested and convicted and appealing, how did this lead to this particular protest?
From the time of the arrest on Thursday night and Friday and Saturday and Sunday, the word had gotten around over Montgomery of my arrest because of this incident. And people just began to decide that they wouldn't ride the bus on the day of my trial, which was Monday, December 5th. And Monday morning, when the buses were out on their regular run, they remained empty, and people were walking or getting rides in cars with people who would pick them up as best they could. On Monday night, the mass meeting at the Holt Street Baptist Church had been called, and there were many thousand people there. They kept coming, and some people never did get in the church. There were so many. And the first day of remaining off the bus had been so successful, it was organized then that we wouldn't ride the bus until our request had been granted.
Well, Mrs. Parks, how did word get around Montgomery, Alabama, so quickly? First of all, that you were arrested and convicted, and second of all, how did the word get around so quickly that there would be a meeting and that people would refuse to ride?
There were telephone calls from those who knew about it to others, and also an article came out in the newspaper on Friday morning about the Negro woman overlooked segregation. She was seated in the front seat, the white section of the bus, and refused to take a seat in the rear of the bus. That was a first newspaper account.
They didn't ride on the day of the trial. They walked. And then how come they kept right on walking?
I feel they kept on walking because I was not the only person who had been mistreated and humiliated. Others had gone through the same experience, some even worse experience than mine. And they all felt that the time had come that they should decide that we would have to stop supporting the bus company until we were given better service.
How did it happen to become the kind of religious movement it became? Or at least we seem to understand it as a kind of a religious movement. There is the talking of walking and praying. There is the whole appeal to the religious peaceful aspect. And of course, a number of ministers have taken a very active part in the leadership. How did this come about?
I think this came about because the ministers were very much interested in it, and we had our meetings in the churches, and being the minority, we felt that nothing could be gained by violence or threats or a belligerent attitude. We believed that more could be accomplished through the nonviolent passive resistance. We had no quarrel with anyone. We only want to stop riding the buses until we are treated as any other passenger.
And what do you mean when you say as if you, until you're treated as any other passenger? Does this mean, for example, that you want these buses to be completely desegregated?
Yes, that's true.
You want to stop the segregation on these buses.
Mrs. Rosa Parks, December 1955. It was she who decided she'd had it, enough. And by sitting where she did, by being arrested, set off what was and probably always will be considered the turning point in this century of the drive toward self-liberation, self-emancipation. She said, I would have to know once and for all what rights I had as a citizen and a human being in Montgomery, Alabama. This is going back into history, I'll admit, but it's not going backward. For the march that started then goes on, rising and swelling, to make this a better nation for all. And something worth recalling on this eve of the 100-year commemoration of the Emancipation Proclamation. Thanks for listening. This is Sidney Rogers speaking.